Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. For the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.com. On this week's Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Suzanne Ravy. Suzanne is a photographer from the East Coast. She has her BFA in photography from Pratt. She is the former photography editor at U.S. News and World Report in Washington, D.C. And now she's a fabulous black and white photographer doing all kinds of great prints, traditional wet darkroom, a lot of childhood pictures, you know, just a bunch of fabulous work. Her work is unbelievable. Check her work out. You know, she's also a moderator on APUG, very highly involved in the traditional photographic community. She's an all-around great person. Suzanne, how are you doing today?
It's going just fine.
Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program to talk about yourself and your black and white photography. I see you're doing some color, some Instax. You got a lot of cool things going on.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about how you got the photography bug. When did you actually want to make pictures? Did you start this off when you were a kid? What happened to make you want to be a photographer?
In high school, I got interested in photography. My mom, she's an artist, and she had a studio in the back of our house, and she took a class in photography and built a darkroom. And I ended up using it more often than she did. So I just started in high school, and they had a mini course in photography at the time. And then I eventually went to college and majored in photography. I have a BFA from Pratt Institute. That's kind of when it started, sort of high school, just shutterbugging around school, taking pictures of friends and stuff like that.
So just personal stuff, nothing actually for official publications or anything of the sort.
Right. I did a little bit of yearbook work, but I had this notion that I wanted to be a photojournalist. So that's why I ended up going to college and majoring in photography.
And you went to Pratt.
And I went to Pratt. Mm-hmm.
So what happened after you graduated from Pratt?
Well, I had a few sort of years, odd jobs here and there, but eventually I ended up working as a photography editor at U.S. News and World Report magazine, which I did that for a really long time. So even though I wasn't shooting, I was working in the field of journalism, magazine editorial photography, hiring photographers, selecting pictures, meeting all those deadlines when things were still film in that world. So I was there through most of the 90s working in that field.
So at U.S. News and World Report, typically people would submit things to you as Chrome?
Yes, they would.
So everything was a slide transparency work?
Yes, it was. And we had a lab, and we had several staff photographers, and we used to run a lot of film through the lab. It was a lot of Fuji film, actually, that they shot. So yeah, everything was Chrome. And then it was all scanned in for reproduction on that side. Although near the time when I left, digital photography was beginning to start to happen a little bit. But for the most part, it was really all Chrome, what we reproduced from. I would say the Gulf War was the first time you had a lot of electronic photography, and it was still shot on film. But literally everything that we actually ran in the magazine had been submitted via telephone line and stuff like that. Like every picture you saw published was. So to me, that's sort of the beginning of digital photography in a way, because we didn't have time to get the film flown back.
Now, when you started at the magazine, did you go right in as a photo editor? What brought you to that point?
Well, before I worked there, I worked at a small photo agency, like a stock house, and they were one of our clients. And I actually went in there as what they called a photo researcher at the time. So whenever we had needs for pictures, I would get on the phone to all various resources. I mean, nowadays, I think people do that all online, but we did it over the phone, digging around for existing material as needed. And then slowly, I started to move into different sections of the magazine that required more assignment photography. There's a real art to signing photography, I found, and finding the right photographer and trying to decide what kind of pictures you need for different stories. So slowly went from being a photo researcher and then being responsible for a certain section of the magazine as a photo editor.
So as photographers try to get into photojournalism, and now it's a little bit different because all this electronic, digital, blah, blah, what do you find that is a good attribute for somebody that wants to do photojournalism, submit images to magazines and so forth like that?
Like if you're a young photographer trying to break into that, and it's a field that's in such transition, I don't know where it's going to land myself, and I've been out of it for a while now. But I would say what's most important is that you can make good pictures just about anywhere. I had a lot of assignments where I needed an interesting photograph of somebody at their home or behind their desk, and those are just hard pictures to make interesting. And if you can do it, I found those photographers very valuable. Well, we did a lot of consumer reporting in that magazine, and to make sort of ordinary people interesting was really the job as a photographer, and that's a tough thing to do. And you got to get your chops on being able to make good photographs just about anywhere.
Did you find that you had a lot of photographers submitting work to you? How did you actually get interaction between yourself and the photographer?
I know that some of the bigger magazines up in New York had drop-off policies, but we actually had photographers make appointments and come in. Especially earlier in the week when we weren't as busy. Mondays, Tuesdays weren't quite as busy days for us because the magazine closed on Friday. We'd have photographers come in and share portfolios, and a lot of them had carousels, the old projected carousels, and they would show their work to us because we had viewing rooms where we showed the pictures to the writers and the staff. And then we'd have photographers come in that way to show work and just talk about what they've been doing. And sometimes photographers would come in once every year or two and show us recent work. I mean, it might be a photographer that we knew, but they wanted to kind of make their rounds and show new work to us, which we were always open to seeing. And actually, apropos of your last question, I always felt it was important with photographers that they have a good, strong body of personal work, because you can learn a lot about how somebody shoots by work that they do that's personal. And a lot of times photographers would show that. And it was a conversation. It was a dialogue that you had with photographers. I think what becomes harder for people to break into it is I had a group of photographers who I would hire because I know they were reliable in producing pictures that I needed. And I think what can get tough is to kind of get into that group because it's easier for me to hire somebody I know and come through. When I had to hire new people, it was always a little nerve-wracking. Are they going to come through or not with the picture? But yeah, a lot of people come in. A lot of people would mail portfolios to us if they couldn't to look at them, because there was not really this kind of online interaction with photography the way there is now. I think there's something said for meeting somebody in person.
Definitely. I mean, if you can even get somebody on the phone, it's a great thing. For everything now, everybody wants the email and Facebook and blah, blah, blah. And I think if you can have a one-to-one communication with somebody, that's going to be the best way to communicate.
Yeah. That is. And I mean, I find Facebook's great. Online is great. I mean, I'm sure if I were still doing photo editing, I would use those tools. When I had to make an assignment, I really wanted to talk to the photographer about what we're trying to accomplish. And I think that's much easier done as a conversation. And I expect that's still the case now. The actual sort of how the pictures get to the photo editors might be different. but it seems to me the content and what has to happen can't have changed that much in how you really get somebody to make a picture that you need, that whole conversation that has to take place.
So what's your thoughts on people that want to even try to get into doing this? Is it just a lost cause anymore? Because there's so many photographers and the ease of acquisition for equipment with digital that you don't really need a skill set almost.
Yeah, I think it's really tough. I do think it's difficult, and I think it's probably harder now than it was for people of my age. But I think really you just have to master it fully and be very, very good at it. I mean, I think that's really the best thing you can do, just fully master the craft of photography. Because you're right, it is inundated with a lot of people who pick up a reasonably good camera and think that they're a professional. But I think a lot of those people can't produce work consistently. I mean, they might be able to get one or two or even more good pictures, but can they do that over the long haul of a career?
What's your thoughts on people that have never shot analog capture? They've always shot digital. Do you think that they're missing something when it comes to a basic skill set? Do you think somebody can start off with digital and be proficient, or are they missing the boat?
I think they're missing something that's pretty basic about the medium. I don't think you have to master, say, the darkroom in order to print digital, but I think it would sure help to have some knowledge of the analog piece of the equation. I mean, I think it depends on what your goals are as a photographer. I mean, I'm interested in hanging things on the wall, and if that's what you're interested in doing, if you want prints, then I think being at least familiar with the darkroom can't hurt. But there's plenty of photographers that I knew who shot chrome and sent everything to a lab. So they didn't necessarily spend a lot of time with chemistry the way I do nowadays and did fine and did beautiful work. But I do think if you're learning, it just cannot hurt to understand it or at least walk through the process at least once and just to have a general idea of how from negative to positive that works. But at the same time, when I was learning photography, I didn't learn every historic process. I mean, I learned a few, but I didn't walk through the whole history of the process of photography when I was learning. So I don't necessarily think that you have to do that now if you're just learning digitally. But I think your learning curve will just lessen if you have some knowledge of film and how it works.
Well, I think people have the misconception that you can shoot digital and I have these raw files and I can do whatever I want. They don't understand it has the same latitude or less than shooting chrome.
Exactly. And chrome was always the hardest thing to shoot. I mean, it seems a shame that a lot of people don't understand. I mean, black and white film has the most latitude. It's great to work with. So it's because it gives you a lot of wiggle room to make mistakes on your exposure, which can lessen your frustration when you're learning this process. I mean, I'm certainly glad I didn't start shooting chromes when I first started shooting film. I mean, I think that would have been a very frustrating way to learn photography, to have a medium that is so limited.
Sure, but it's so rewarding when you get them back, though. Especially if you nailed it, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once you do, they're great.
So during the time when you were at the magazine, did you continue shooting from what you were doing through high school and college?
Yeah, I did. A little different. I did a lot of street photography in college. Sort of the end of the kind of golden age of street photography, and I learned from those type of kind of Leica shooters, and I did a lot of that kind of photography, really looking. And then when I was working at the magazine, I shot a lot of chrome myself, partly because I could use the film and they would process my film for me. So it was kind of a nice little perk of the job. And I would always shoot for myself. But the way I shoot nowadays, I'm much more focused and much more committed to what it is I'm trying to do with my pictures than I was at the magazine. I think I spent so much effort photographically and creatively on my job that for my own pictures, it was just a little more casual shooting. It was not as committed or as focused as I am now in the way I shoot now. But I always shot for myself and just kept at it, usually when I was traveling. And the work is just okay. I mean, I'm glad I did it because I think it kept my eye sharp, but it's just okay work. It's nothing I'm going to try and show or anything like that.
Did you find that shooting color and doing a lot of chrome work helped your black and white photography and even to where it is today?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't really even thought about that ever, but yes, I think I did. And I think looking at a lot of other photographers' work, when I was editing work, the way I looked at pictures, I learned a lot from the photographers who I hired, just looking at the way they shot. And it was great to sort of look at a whole shoot, because we would process a lot of the film, and I would see everything. Some photographers hate that. Oh, my God, everything, even when it's a portrait, when they blink. And I just like to see how they thought through the whole shoot, what they were thinking. You can kind of see that. You would just spread the chromes out on the light box, and you could really get a sense of how the shoot developed, and their sense of light, and their sense of color. So I think it was a mix of what I was doing, shooting for myself in the Chrome, and what I was seeing from photographers whose work I was editing.
Do you find that because of the photographer's work that you were editing and you were actually able to lay out a story, so forth, on a light table, that this has also helped yourself in composing and trying to tell the story that you're doing now?
Yes. Although I think like what I'm doing now is more poetic. And what I was doing there, the stories were much more beginning, middle, end kind of reads. And the pictures had to support that way of working. But yeah, the way you move through a story and the way you edit pictures for a story, it's not entirely dissimilar from the way I'm working now. But the way I'm working now is, well, it's just less journalistic. It's less of that kind of, I have a point to make, and maybe this is a point we can make with a picture. I'm exploring a little bit more with the way I'm working now. I'm not sure when I'm going to finish this work. It's very intuitively done, and I think the way I worked at the magazine was, well, more scripted, I would say. I mean, we'd allow for fate, we'd allow for mistakes to happen, we'd allow for interesting tangents if a photographer was working on a story, but we did have a certain amount of points that we needed to get photographed for whatever reason. And I think what I did then certainly deepens my understanding of what I'm doing now, but what I'm doing now is just a little less scripted, a little looser.
So let's fast forward to what you're doing these days. So you're raising kids?
I'm doing the mom thing, left the magazine world, and a while ago now, my oldest is 11. And it took me, I would say, a couple years. I was just photographing them a lot when they were little and shooting both color and black and white film. It was becoming clear to me that that was kind of the way things were going to start to go. When I was sending off my film to a local lab, and I just found I really liked the black and white. I was just shooting, it was either Ilford XP2 or the Kodak monochromatic C41 film that they made. And I just found that I really, really liked the black and white. So they just had more sort of resonance for me. And I got frustrated with sending the film out. I wanted to take back that control. And I hadn't really been in the darkroom since college. And it had been a good, I don't know, 16, 17 years between college and building the darkroom. So I went ahead and built the darkroom and just started back in with printing and doing my own negatives. And it kind of snowballed from there.
So you're currently still taking lots of pictures of kids and your kids. Typically, you'll find that when somebody has kids, that they take a lot of pictures of their kids and it sort of tapers off. And then you stop taking pictures. Your work hasn't tapered off. Are you working on a documentation type thing, or is it just a matter of you're just taking pictures of your kids?
Well, in the long run, I would like to sort of form this into a book. It is mostly my kids. It's some of their friends. Because as they get older, there's just more friends around. And so if kids come over to play, they're fair game. They're here at my house. And it is an exploration of childhood. Even though I started out more making snapshots for myself, once I started printing again, I became interested in making pictures that were about something a little bit beyond just me and my kids. Because I think this is one of the greatest things about photography. I think you can find really universal themes in a photograph that are very personal.
Do you see this book that you might want to put together in the future that it's a story of your children, or is it a story of childhood?
More a story of childhood, a more broadly based group of photographs about childhood and not just specifically about my kids, although they certainly play a huge role in that. And I have lots of pictures I feel are just about them. Even the black and whites, I've got more snapshot type black and white pictures of them. But then the ones that I've shown in a few galleries and museums tend to be the ones that to me become something a little bit more interesting and not just about the relationship between me and them, but something a little bit greater.
Have you found over the course of the past 11 years taking pictures of your children that your outlook on what you're shooting and what you're composing has changed?
Yes. I can actually run through that a little bit. When they were real little, I've got some nice pictures of them. They had play dates when they were toddlers. And when I look back at some of those earlier pictures, at this point I was printing in the darkroom, but I was still shooting with 35 millimeter. And I do have some really nice pictures, but to me they look like they would be good pictures to use in, for example, a Sunday magazine article about kids of some kind. And I think then as I've moved, I changed formats in the way I was shooting, and now to me the pictures don't seem as editorial looking as they did when I first started. So I mean, I've definitely seen that kind of shift into something that I would say is more art than editorial.
What would you say, if you're trying to explain this to somebody, the difference between the way you were composing editorial-wise versus art, compare the two?
I think I've become a little bit more aware of light and shape when I'm actually looking through the camera. my mindset changed just a little bit. I've just taken on a feeling of looking at it in a more abstract way than I did early on. And the other thing is, and this is going to sound weird, when I switched formats, I had a Nikon F100, great workhorse of a camera, but it has these buttons on the back of it where you can do the autofocus. And I was finding that the camera itself was, in a weird way, a little too helpful in helping me compose pictures, so that I was making pictures that struck me as pictures I've already seen, pictures that were a little bit more cliched. And when I moved into using the Mamiyas that I use now, and they're slower, I mean, maybe that's part of what helped. I don't have the camera guiding me or guiding the lens the way the F100 was doing it. And it freed me up a little bit in a way of how I was framing my pictures, if that makes sense at all. I do think a lot of those 35mm cameras are great with all those bells and whistles, but in some ways, I just found I was making pictures that just seemed a little bit predictable. And so I think the change of format helped in how I shifted how I was looking at the world and how I was looking at what I was photographing, but not letting the camera do quite so much thinking for me.
Sure, because I think with the medium format, at least with the Mamiya, because you're shooting RZs, RBs, right?
Yeah, I shoot with an RZ. I also shoot with a Mamiya 7, so I mix those two formats up.
Sure. Well, either way, I mean, like you said, from the F100, that's sort of a run-and-gun, point-and-shoot, fire-away, does it all for you. When you slow down and you're using these other medium-format cameras, I think when you do slow down, now you have more of a chance to think instead of just impulse. Yeah. You actually have to think about it.
Yeah, you really do. And I just found my pictures, just because I had to slow down, they just got better. Now, it's harder for me to catch action, but when you do, boy, it's great. And I've gotten a few, but yeah, I really do like working with them. It is more difficult. It's more cumbersome, the RZ, and I shoot it handheld, which is probably crazy, and my back is always complaining if I'm using it a lot. But I just sort of like doing it that way. It just altered the way I saw. And to me, how you see is really the most important piece of being a good photographer, how observant you are. And I think it's interesting the way photography records things, which kind of goes back to like a Gary Winogrand. I mean, I see things with my eyes one way, and the camera records absolutely everything in its field of view. And you don't see everything the way a camera does. And so this marvelous surprise that can happen in there. Of course, it can also be a bad thing, because that's when you get the flagpole sticking out of someone's head.
Because most of your work, and what, probably 95% of your work is all people-based. There'd be kids or a commissioned portrait or something, but there's a lot of people in there. You find that you're shooting a lot of your stuff wide open, very shallow depth of field?
Absolutely. I rarely stop down past f5.6. I like a shallow depth of field. Tack sharp is overrated. I like a little blur.
Well, yes, definitely. Do you find that when you're shooting these pictures of the kids and doing the small wonders work and just sort of documenting childhood, is anything posed or is it all whatever you see is what they're doing?
It's actually a little bit of a mix of both. Some of it is posed, but it tends to be very spontaneously posed. I recently made a picture of my younger son. He and my older son were in the middle of a heated water balloon fight, and I got a little bit of the action of that. And then at some point, my younger son had these two big water balloons in his hands, and I said, oh, stop right there. And I mean, it was literally one frame, and I just have him holding these funny balloons, and his hands and the balloons are sharp, and his face is a little out of focus because it's such a shallow depth of field. But it happened very, very spontaneously. So when it is posed, it kind of comes out of what it is that they're doing, and it tends to happen fairly quickly. We have a little frog pond. I have photographed, it seems, a lot of frogs and toads. And sometimes if they catch one, if I'm out there with them, just hold on, wait, let me see the frog. And I'll take a picture that way. And then at times I'm back up and they just keep playing. So it can be a little bit of a mix. It's a fine balancing act because it can be annoying to the kids to have me kind of hovering over with a camera all the time. So I have to sort of get out of their space at times and let them just play with their friends or whatever without me taking pictures. So I have to sometimes be fairly quick with what I'm doing because I want to keep doing it. So if I can do it in a way that's not totally annoying to them.
I'm sure your two children are used to having pictures taken around them, so they don't even bother with it. Do you find that some of their friends coming over, and even now that they're getting older, that they are aware of the camera or they don't care?
My kids, I would say, are somewhat less aware of the camera than some of their friends. I have one nephew, my brother's little boy, who the minute he sees it, just starts running away. And I don't see him that frequently. I haven't photographed him all that much because they live out in Denver. But I do find there are kids who aren't really used to it, become really self-conscious. And I think it's partly because a lot of parents, when they try and photograph their kids, it becomes this exercise in torture for everybody. The kids have to sit still, they have to smile, sometimes they have to get dressed up. And so the whole idea of being photographed for a lot of kids is just not something that's particularly fun to do. And I think because my kids can just go about their business while I'm photographing, I have a little bit of an easier time. And that's not to say they don't get tired of it occasionally, because they certainly do. But I think a lot of people, when they photograph their kids, they are expecting to do it in not much time and get a great picture of the kids. And it becomes a little bit of a battle of wills. And I think if you step back and just let them be a little bit, you'll get better pictures. And then hopefully they're friends. If that happens, I get better pictures with them too.
So you're shooting with the Mamiya gear, the medium format. Let's talk about film. What are you shooting?
I like to shoot Tri-X. I managed to wrestle TXP down because it came in 220 format. I do find the 220 format really, really handy, but that's not really going to be an option for much longer. I have a little bit left. I did find it a little bit of a difficult film to work with because it seems to like very low-key lighting, and I'm out in the sun plenty. So I just found when it's a bright, sunny day, it's not best film to use. So, but Tri-X, certainly. The regular Tri-X is.
And you like it over the T-Max?
I do, but I haven't used T-Max all that much. I mean, if they made that in 220, I'd figure out a way to use it. I think what I never liked about T-Max is just there's something about the grain that seems a little too smooth or perfect. I just didn't like what I got from it. I've shot it a few times. I have to say, I haven't really shot it a lot. I mean, if I were really going to get to know it, I'd probably just buy 30 rolls and really run it through its paces and figure out a way to do it. But since the Tri-X is working for me right now, out of laziness, that's what I've been using. But I just like the grain of it more than the T-Max.
Color. You shoot a little bit of color, yeah?
A little bit. Because they stopped making black and white 220 film, and I have two 220 backs for the RZ, I just hate to see those things become paperweights. So I actually just recently bought some Portra 400, but honestly, I've shot one roll since I bought it over the summer, or late in the summer I bought it, and haven't had it processed yet. I was going to wait till I finish shooting a couple more rolls. Of course, now I think they're changing that film out too. But yeah, I'm definitely going to start doing a little bit more color work, I think, with that. I might as well. I would sort of be interested in seeing where I can take some color. I don't know yet how I would print it, though. I sort of have to get my head around printing color again, which I haven't done since I was in college. I learned how to print color the hard way, optically, but I just want to see where I take it. And then if I'm interested in printing it, then I'll start looking into that.
When you're shooting stuff black and white, and I'm sure this is probably the case, you're more interested in what's going on in the composition more so than color, because black and white kills that to a point.
To a point, yeah. I don't really think so much about the color. I mean, I think some of those earlier snaps when I was shooting more of a mix of color and black and white, I think there's a certain amount of kids' toys that are made from plastic that are kind of ugly colors, and I think those are hard to deal with color film at times. But yeah, shooting color itself, I think it becomes in some ways more complicated than black and white, because you do have that extra layer to think about. It can just pick up, I think, more distractions, where black and white can just deal with it in a kind of a clean way.
Do you find that because you've been shooting black and white for so long that when you do go to shoot color, there is an influence over what you're shooting?
I think so, and I'm not sure I'm going to change much. I mean, I think no matter whether you're shooting black and white or color, you have to be aware of the light. Although I think I am interested in monochromatic color, if that makes sense. I'm probably more likely to shoot after the sun goes down when the light is a little more muted and colors are more muted. I think that I would be more interested in that kind of color than middle of the day sort of light.
Sure, sort of more overexposed pastel-y type softness.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm in such an embryonic stage of getting back to color that who knows where it'll take me. But I have been interested in shooting it again because it's been a good long while since I have. I mean, I've shot that chrome for a long time and got pretty good at seeing color. And I think it'll be interesting. And shooting it with medium format, since I've never really shot color very much with the medium format, I think it'll be an interesting way to see where I can take it.
Now, you shoot any digital at all?
I have a little digital, like a point-and-shoot, which I just do snaps with.
Cell phone type thing?
Well, actually, it's a little nicer than that. It's a little Canon G11.
Oh, nice.
I had another Canon something or other that I just thought was so awful. And it was not awful, like, in a good way. So I just decided, okay, I'm going to get kind of a nice little point-and-shoot. Because, like the thing about the cobbler's kids never having shoes, they never have any little snaps, and I was getting grandparents, we want color pictures. So it's just easier to sort of generate those quick little prints with that camera. I can either upload it to Shutterfly or something like that and just get the little snaps that I can placate various people. Also, I mean, I make these 20 by 24 prints. My mom's like, I don't have a room on the wall.
Exactly. But at least the pick with the G11 was a good one.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I just carry it around in the purse and I'll make very quick little snaps with it and pretty happy with the quality of the pictures. In fact, I have a couple that I've made on that and I just wish that were on film.
You can just make yourself a digital negative. So do you partake in any hybrid activities?
I don't right now. I don't at all. From time to time, I toy the idea, should I maybe do some platinum printing? Because it'd be fun to see how some of these pictures might look with some different processes, especially contact printing processes, in which case I would make the digital enlarged negatives. But I haven't done that yet. I've been kind of sticking with gelt and silver for now. Just life being what it is, I just haven't had the time to explore that possibility yet.
Let's talk about your darkroom. You've got a new rig set up that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, we moved and we had kind of a nice space in the new basement and it's a really nice big dark room. I've got twice as much sink space as I did in the old dark room. Got quite a bit more counter space. It even has an island in it. The people before us have like a woodworking wood shop in this area and they had that island in there and I just kept that. We replaced the counter on it and set up a nice space. And I've been thinking about doing some one-on-one teaching and it's just nice big enough space I could teach in there as well. So that's something I'd like to do.
No, it's great looking. It's pretty substantial.
Yeah, and I've switched enlargers too. I acquired this 23C from a friend. Although I've been having a hard time printing with it, I was thinking, oh my God, I moved. I can't print anymore. But I think the problem was the bulb on the enlarger because it was such an old bulb. So I've recently replaced that and hopefully that'll solve that.
Well, you have so much room. Now you can start developing color. You can do your own chrome.
This is true. I can. I never liked doing the color work because I just remember we did the print and then it had to go into a tank and it just took a long time to go through the tank. And then finally it would come out and we'd have to try out to the sun and look at the color and it would be off a little bit. It's not as much fun to me as black and white. I like watching the prints come up in the trays. But yeah, if I do start doing the color, I certainly have the room for it. I mean, I could certainly get back into doing that. So it's a very versatile space. I'm really pleased that we were able to build it the way we did. And it's got a little light trap, so the kids can walk in without turning on the light or opening a door, which is handy. And they're old enough now, I don't have to lock it. So yeah, it's just a great space. And I can't hear the phone that's out in the house. I mean, I probably should put a phone in there, but it's sort of nice to kind of go in there and not be bothered by anybody. Because you can get lost in printing for a good long while.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it just eats time. But it's fun, though.
It is. And there's really something nice about you have a little breakfast, a little coffee, go in there, and by lunch, I've got a tray full of museum quality prints and haven't been interrupted by anybody. So I do really like that. I do think some people find the darkroom intensely boring, but I think it's fun. I like it. It's sort of time for myself in a weird way.
What are you printing on? What do you like paper-wise?
I've been printing on Ilford Warm Tone for the most part. I have played around with an Adox Variotone warm tone paper that I really like. It tones beautifully in selenium. Also tones nicely in a lot of other toners, although my work feels too documentary to tone it too much. I just don't like it as much. But I can see that paper if somebody's making work that wants to be toned. It's a beautiful, beautiful paper. So those two are kind of my favorites right now. And Berger VCCB came back, so I bought some of that. But it looks a lot like Ilford Warm Tone to me. It doesn't look like it used to look. But I think there's still quite a few good choices out there for fiber paper.
I definitely think so. So what happens to your work after you print it? Where does it go?
I do have a gallery now. Last has landed a gallery. So they've got all of my 14s and their flat files down there. I have sort of an exhibition set of pictures that are framed up, kind of ready to go. I currently have some work on view at the Neshoba Brook Bakery in West Concord, which is near where I live. A friend of mine was slated to have a show and for a variety of reasons couldn't do it. So at the last minute, I had all these framed prints ready to go. So just had that up in a day, which was nice. And then a lot of them get stored in boxes around here. I'm hoping to try and sell some to collectors. I do have the goal of trying to get some work into some museum collections. So we'll see.
What do you find, Suzanne, that people are interested in buying?
I know somebody recently has ordered, and I still need to get the print made. I have a picture called Weed. It's like an arm holding a little flower. I haven't sold a lot, so we'll see.
What kind of interest do you find that the galleries are giving you? Are they interested more in a generalization of something or childhood? What are they saying about your work and what they're showing?
Well, I showed some work at the Griffin Museum, and it was largely self-curated. I basically provided the prints that were ready to go. I think I showed about 18 pictures there. And the owner of Panopticon, I know he's got sort of his favorites on the top of the box. And it's hard to say. I think he just wants to see just more and more prints. So I'm just trying to produce those as quickly as I can for him. Because I don't really have a sales record yet, it's kind of hard to know which ones will sell, if any. It is a little bit of a hard market to try and sell fine art prints. And I think mine are a little bit difficult to sell because they're more documentary than a lot of fine art photographers who do more landscape type work. So that's really kind of a question I can't fully answer just yet. I will be having a show in February in Boston at Panopticon. I'm going to try and do a lot of new work. I did shoot quite a bit over the summer, and I have a few new pictures that I'm looking forward to printing, and probably will show some of those as well. But I think the pictures that are probably the most universal are going to be the ones that sell the best.
So what do you look forward to photographically to go do that you haven't got to do? What are you looking forward to go shoot or something that you haven't got to do yet?
Well, I also think about when the kids really get older, what am I going to shoot then? And that can be kind of scary to think about because I don't know in some ways. We have a lot of woods around here and I walk through the woods a lot and I have photographed a little bit in there. It is kind of landscape, which is not really something I've done very much of, but I'm actually interested in doing it and just to see what I see and how I do that. And I expect I'm just going to keep photographing the people around who are close to me, family and friends. I'd love to start photographing adults or older people, too.
Well, let's talk about your commission portraits. So this is something that you actively seek.
I did for a long time. I actually backed off a little bit over the past like year and a half, 2 years, partly because we had a number of issues with my kids that I had to attend to. They both had a variety of learning disabilities that we were dealing with, and now that we've moved, we've been here a year and we're settling in, I'm probably going to try and get back to doing the commission portraits. I just had to back off a little bit because I was finding that I couldn't really do all the work. I mean, my husband works quite a bit, so it was just something had to give. But I'm going to start probably doing that a little bit more in the commission portraits. My favorites are people who are really open. See, I just had a client who I think I photographed their family a couple years ago, and they just recently called and said, oh, we'd like a reprint of our family picture because their son went off to college and they wanted to give him one for his desk, which was really nice of them to come back and want that. Those kind of clients are the best. And I really like doing it. It's a lot of fun, but had to back off. I have noticed it's difficult to do everything, like shoot it, do the film, do the prints. And the hardest part is figuring out the little sort of 4x5 proof prints. Because it's kind of hard to find labs that do that, especially if you do your own film. And, I mean, I figured out a way to do them pretty quickly, but I still found that really tedious. So I was finding that the amount of time I was spending in the dark room, there was no way I was going to be able to ever really make money at it, even though I charge a lot. But I realized I also had to rethink how I need to go about doing it, especially that proofing part. Because with digital, I mean, everybody, the whole world is sort of set up digital, and it's pretty easy to do it that way. But I like to be a little different.
Well, there's a few people. I mean, there's a gentleman in Boston that's doing actual true silver prints on a mini lab machine type deal. And a Durst, too. But then again, then you have the deal where you have to start scanning all your negs and doing that.
Yeah, and part of me just thinks, well, I should get some teenager to come in here and I'll pay them a couple cents per scan or something, and I could go that route. But for whatever reason, that's the part that's the hardest bit. And I mean, when I do my own personal work, I can read the negatives really easily. I mean, to me, a negative on a light box, and then I'm good to go. I'll make the print from that. I mean, I make a few contact sheets, but I feel like my time in the darkroom is so limited because I kind of have to be out when the kids are home from school to spend a lot of time on proof prints and contact sheets. I just would rather not. My larger prints, there's a place near me called Palm Press, and they do my larger prints. So more and more of my client work, I've had them do the prints, even the smaller ones, because it's just a question of how much time am I going to spend in the darkroom and where do I need help? Because it can be hard to do it all yourself. And then throw in the equation of having kids who just had special needs. I was just dropping everything to go to different meetings, and it's amazing how much time that can take. But that seems to have settled itself now and worked itself out. So we'll see this school year if I have a little more time to do the commission portraits, because I'd love to get back into doing them a little more often.
No, they're fabulous. Beautiful work. So talking about spending time, you like to spend some time on online communities and help out here and there.
Yeah, I do that probably too much, but I am a moderator on APUG. There's another site called ILP, which is a lot of children's portrait photographers. I don't spend too much time over there, but I do like to gently encourage people to try film from time to time, just spreading the word a little because I think it'd be nice to see more people shooting film again.
Well, I really think, too, in the senior market portrait and weddings and even kids stuff, that there's an upswing in film use, that people are completely burned out about spending so much time on the computer. And they can shoot film, but then it gets into the hybrid giggy and they don't have to do all this work. If you do it correctly, then you don't need to spend all this time in Photoshop.
Exactly. Exactly. Can be a very good way to work.
It's still not the same as traditional analog process all the way through, but for some people, I guess it works out well.
Yeah, and I've actually seen some hybrid prints that are really nice. I mean, they are making papers nowadays. I saw Bob Carney from Elevator Digital Lab, which is up in Toronto, and he did sort of a demonstration here in Massachusetts, I guess, a year or so ago, where he put a fiber print next to one of his hybrid prints. It was the same picture, and really the difference between the two was very minimal. There was a little loss of detail in the shadows, but that was about it. If I hadn't seen them side by side, they were beautiful. So, I mean, I think that there's certainly hybrid ways of working that just make it quite easy. Although I think you still need to know your stuff up to a point. So you don't have to spend a lot of time on Photoshop. And I certainly don't spend a lot of time on Photoshop. And I mean, to me, the computer is great for communication, but to be making pictures on it, I don't know, I just don't like working that way. I'd rather be buried in the darkroom.
Exactly. So where's the best place that people can go to look at your work? You have a blog as well.
Yep, I write a blog. My work is at SuzanneRevy.com, and the blog is SuzanneRevy.blogspot.com. I call it A Grain of Sand, after a William Blake poem, The Auguries of Innocence, which I think poetry and photography have kind of a weird interrelated connection in that poem. If you ever read it, to me, it describes a lot of the things in it that photography does very, very well. And seeing kind of universal truths in little details is what I love about this medium.
No, it's great stuff, and your work is beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very cool to see somebody doing true analog photography all the way through. And a lot of women doing it either, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There are a few of us out there. I know you've talked to Heather McKay-Bowes and Cheryl Jacobs. There are a few of us.
There's a few, but the ratio is not high enough.
I mean, part of the reason I'm on APUG is I think there are too few women there. It'd be nice to see more women hosting. Because I think it can be intimidating sometimes. It can be sort of heavy shop talk with a lot of guys around. It can be a little turnoff for a lot of women. Hopefully I can help make it a little more welcoming for them.
No, it's great. And it's great that you put the time in to help over there and moderate and just keep people in line.
Well, we like to keep it cordial at the very least.
Exactly. Sometimes people get out of control. So, Suzanne, I really appreciate you joining today. Great to have you in the program. We look forward to having you back to chat about some other topics. And again, just beautiful, fabulous photography. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, there you go. Suzanne Revy. Beautiful work. Great photographer. The series she's doing on childhood, her black and white prints. This stuff is fabulous. You know, this is 100% traditional, true photographic process. Suzanne's an advocate of all this great work. She's very popular and very heavily involved with APUG at apug.org. You know, and a lot of great stuff. And she's an excellent representative of a fine, fine photographer and a great person. Definitely check her website out. The Inside Analog Photo Radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chroma, dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shippard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.